History That Doesn't Suck is a legit, hard-hitting American history podcast told through entertaining stories. As we approach America's 250th anniversary, now might be the time to go back and learn how we got here. With more than 200 episodes, you can binge your way, decade by decade, defining event to defining event, from the founding into the 20th century. Join me, Professor Greg Jackson, for History That Doesn't Suck, an Odyssey podcast, available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Time for the Friday edition of Hancock and Kelly.
You two belong together.
Sponsored by Serta Pro Painters. John Hancock, Michael Kelly on News Radio 1120, KMOX.
Well, we might belong together, but we're not together. John Hancock in solo with you this morning. Michael Kelly is in, well, I think right now, we'll find out here in a minute, I think he's in beautiful Florence, Italy, enjoying a vacation of a lifetime. Well, another vacation of a lifetime for Michael Kelly, but I've had a rough go of it here this week. So Wednesday, it was raining. Remember that, Frank? Rain coming down. And my dear sweet wife, who rarely does this, but she had dinner with a friend that evening, and she said, as she's walking out the door, would you mind walking Gus? Gus, of course, is our now 9-year-old. We tell him he's an Icelandic sheepdog, but he's actually a mutt. Anyway, so, you know, it's wet, rainy, it's dark. Put Gus on the leash. I really don't like walking the dog, but I said I would do it. And there we went. Down the street there in the neighborhood. A little mist in the air, not bad. Gus prancing along, very happy to be. I've got the little milk bones in my pocket so that when he doesn't bark at a car, he gets a milk bone. So he's eating his, crunching his little milk bones and doing his business out there. And Gus wants to cross the street. So we do. We cross the street. And the mist is coming down. It's dark. I may have mentioned that. And all of a sudden, old Hancock here, I step with my left foot into what apparently was a mud patch right there on the sidewalk. Down I go. And boom, my right knee slams to the ground. That was the lead. That was the lead body part that landed on the pavement. Rolled over onto my side into a whole bunch of mud, and so I can barely walk here. And I'm you know, at my age, I'm one fall away from the home. So and I think the kids would make that decision pretty quick. So I rolled around. I got up. I limped home. Man, I was covered in mud. It was really awful. So be careful out there when you're walking the dog, because you know, I wouldn't want that to happen to you. So I'm recovering. I've got a great big, what do they call those things, strawberries on my knee. It hurts. Something is clicking in there. I'm not going to worry about that anytime soon, but I'm sure there's something going on. And I'm a little hobbled, but nonetheless, here I am. Because neither rain nor sleet nor snow nor mud nor falls will keep me from visiting with all of you. And I'm delighted to be here today all by myself. We've got an action-packed show today. Hope to be joined by Colonel Jeff McCausland in the next hour to talk about the new intelligence and foreign policy infrastructure of the Trump administration. We'll be interested to get his thoughts on that. Going to be joined by our NFL insider. Big week in football this week. You've got, I think, the marquee game is going to be the undefeated Kansas City Chiefs against the Buffalo Bills. That's going to be a humdinger. And if the Chiefs are going to lose a game this season, that's likely the one. So our NFL insider is going to join us later. Also, we're going to have Roger Earle, who's the founding drummer of the band Foghat. They've been around now for 52 years. They're coming to town at the Family Arena. Foghat, one of the first concerts I ever attended was Foghat at the old Kiel Opera House. Man, that must have been 1980, 81, somewhere in there. And they're a rocking band, and they've been constantly touring for 52 years. It's going to be a fascinating time to visit with him as well. Looking forward to that. And then Michael Kelly's going to join us. And I don't know how much he's been keeping up with politics. He's been in Italy since Sunday. So he's missed a lot of these controversial appointments that Donald Trump has made to the various cabinet positions. I'm going to share my thought about those appointments in the 9 o'clock hour this morning. But he's out there in Italy. He's with a bunch of friends. There's a whole group of them, and I've been getting regular photographs of the stuff they've done. They've been to Bologna. They've been to Venice, not doing Rome on this Italian trip, but they're hitting a lot of things. And he was particularly struck in Bologna. In, well, Venice, he said it was just an amazing city as well. I've never been to Italy, but he's having a great time. We're going to hear all about that, maybe get some of his political thoughts as well. And so that's about it as we're getting ready to visit here on this Friday, the 15th of November, 2024. A beautiful day shaping up out there. It looks lovely as I look out the window. And it's going to be a lot of fun right here on the radio as well. Frank Ladd's alongside with me today, our producer extraordinaire. Glad to have him in here. He's working his magic on this new board. Everybody's complaining about the board, but seems to be working fine right now, Frank. And I appreciate your talent.
You've built a great podcast. The content's solid. The audience is growing. But the money, still not where it should be. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your podcast for free so you can keep doing your thing while our experienced sales team does their thing, finding advertisers and bringing in revenue. No fees, no stress, just real monetization. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and let us show you the money.
In that area, it's time. Ah, yes, from the beautiful nation of Italy, Italia. We are joined on the unnamed guest line. Do we have a name for this? We do not have a name for the guest line. We're joined by Michael Kelly. Michael, how are you, buddy?
I'm under the Tuscan sun right now. I'm sitting across from the Duomo, I hope I said that right, John, and Florence, Italy. I'm getting ready to go to a cooking class.
Whoa.
And life could not be much better. And I don't have to read any of the news about the political stuff right now. So I'm really enjoying life.
What the heck are you going to do in a cooking class? What are they going to teach you?
I think the thing that may have sold my crew was the unlimited wine. No, it's a pasta class. You go. It's a fancy people do this stuff, John.
Is that right?
They stand around and, you know, they have a chef there and they teach you how to roll the pasta and how to, you know, so I just go along and enjoy life, brother.
Well, you know, usually you just take it out of the little box there and,
No. Yeah. No, not that kind of pasta, John.
Oh, really?
The pasta over here, man, almost everywhere you go, first of all the restaurants are the same. It doesn't matter where you're going. They all sell the same stuff. And when you get the pasta, they're making the pasta right there in front of you. They're rolling it, boiling it, and the whole bit.
They're making the pasta in front of you. That sounds expensive. Yeah. Well, that's how is the food, by the way?
No, by the way, the food's insane. Awesome. And it's really not that expensive, comparable to the prices we're all paying in St. Louis. So that's the one thing that's been most shocking to me is that it's, I mean, it's, look, it's not inexpensive, but it's not like if you go to New York and Chicago where there's a noticeable price difference from the life you live in St. Louis.
How's the euro to dollar ratio? Is that working out in your favor or not?
I don't know. We're doing the credit card thing.
Uh-huh.
I have a whole rant for you when we get back about Europe because I've been to enough places now. This is supposed to be the center of civilization and sophistication, but they have some things they just haven't figured out yet.
Well, the cell reception is pretty good. You know, it's better than my cell reception in my home office. So you got to be happy about that. I guess you got one of those international plans on your cell phone?
I have no clue.
Oh,
when I landed in Venice, which, by the way, Venice, brother, that's like something out of a theme park.
Venice?
Yes, it's insane. It's just literally canals everywhere, I know. And you have to take a boat everywhere. There's no cars. And it's just a cute little beautiful place. I hope you and everybody gets to experience it sometime in their life.
Do you have the... Did you go on one of those gondola things?
Well, you have no choice. Like, we landed at the airport, and at the airport, there you go down to the dock, and you get on a boat, and it takes you into from the airport into the place that you're at. Now, I think there may be a couple gondola type things that I was on where, you know, one of the guys I'm with, Bob Soutier, who you know,
yeah,
he and I may have sang a couple of songs while we were out there, but
bet that went
away. We've had a lovely time, man. The weather has been fabulous, and I'm just grateful to get away. How's life for you?
It's all good. It's except I fell walking Gus the other night and darn near blew my leg out. But other than that, I'm doing fine. I miss
you. Are you limping?
Oh, I'm limping bad.
Are you limping?
Yeah, I'm limping. I'm limping.
Do you have to go see a doctor or go to urgent care?
No, I'm not. You know, Hancocks are a tough breed, and I've got a big old strawberry right on my knee. And might have to put a Band-Aid on it. But other than that, you know, I'm going to be...
Yeah, John, I can't help but remember when it comes to medical stuff in the past, Junior had hurt himself at one time, and you said he just needs to suck it up. And then your wife took him to the doctor, and they took him to emergency surgery.
Yeah.
I just want you to make sure you keep an eye out for yourself that maybe it's a little more than you think it is. You know what I mean?
Well, you know, it's swinging and it's holding me up, and that's about all it needs to do these days. So, but we're not here to talk about me, Michael. We're here to talk about you, of course, down there in Italy. How are the people? Are they friendly? Do they speak English?
Everybody speaks English.
Wow.
Everybody wears black. I mean, I wish I could take a picture and send it to you right now from. I'm on this balcony that overlooks the Duomo, and I hope I'm saying that right, because usually when I say foreign words, you get to make fun of me for days afterwards. Remember the rhododendrons?
I do.
Ramadans?
Yes.
But everybody's walking around in black outfits, and everybody seems to be really nice. And, you know, tennis shoes are huge here, dude.
Really?
Every store sells tennis shoes, and the tennis shoes, when I tell you the tennis shoes start at $300, that's the cheapest pair.
Ooh.
And they're fancy tennis shoes, and everybody's wearing them. So I guess, and bell bottoms, John, bell bottoms are back. Particularly younger women are all wearing bell bottoms, which I have not seen back in St. Louis.
Well, the Italians, they're the fashion setters, right? I mean, Italian fashion is... you know, it goes all over the world. So those bell bottoms will be coming over here soon enough, I would predict.
Yeah, and which probably bodes well for yourself, because I know you're a guy who says, no, I don't ever get rid of anything, Kelly. I just wait till it comes back into style.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And if I ever get around to losing weight, I've got a whole wardrobe too. So I'm set for whatever I'm set for whatever might happen. So that which is a good
thing.
Well,
I don't like the setback you had with Gus the other night, because that would have been exciting to see you get back into the walking stuff. Hey, we got to talk politics
for a
second, dude.
Yep.
President Trump in these announcements so far. Obviously, John, he's not my cup of tea, and I expect him to do crazy stuff. Are these appointments real, or is he trying to get everybody worked up so he can push somebody who kind of is extreme MAGA, but not Matt Gaetz and not Bobby Kennedy? Because this stuff doesn't make sense. This seems almost irresponsible.
Well, you know, the Kennedy nomination, I do think, is sincere, and I think that was an agreement they had. Remember, Kennedy dropped out of the race, of course, and then he endorsed Donald Trump, and I suspect, and this is Kennedy's passion. Whatever you may think of him, this certainly is his passion. Healthy nutrition and his concern about vaccines, and so I think that one is for real, and I halfway expect he'll get confirmed, although that'll be interesting. I don't see any path for Matt Gaetz to be confirmed. And, you know, one of the things that you think about, because it went from Marco Rubio, it went from Susie Wiles, who was the chief of staff, which right. I think was a really good pick. And then you got Marco Rubio coming in at Secretary of State, and I, for one, thought, oh, you know, kind of a sigh of relief. This is solid. And it started looking somewhat like the 2017 transition, where he had some, you know, pretty good people on that cabinet. And then you get the Fox host, Pete Hegseth, for Secretary of Defense. And,
right.
You know, I thought, okay, that's unusual.
Interesting.
And then you get Tulsi Gabbard as the Director of National Intelligence. That is concerning. Then you get Matt Gaetz. Then you get Robert Kennedy. So a pick like...
Does my pillow guy job get a job here, too?
Well, who's that? Oh, my pillow? Yeah. Well, you...
My pillow guy, does he get a job here?
You never say no.
Good Lord. But yeah, and then you got the whole thing going on at Mar-a-Lago. It just seems like circus-ish.
Well, the tone and tenor is not a surprise. But I do think some of these appointments have been, at least they've surprised me. But when you have a pick like a Matt Gaetz, who in all likelihood is going to get rejected if he ever gets to a Senate confirmation hearing, it makes a pick like a Pete Hegseth more likely to be confirmed, because the Republican senators are going to be very reluctant to vote down a whole slew of Donald Trump appointees right after he gets elected. He won the popular vote. He got a
tremendous
electoral mandate. So I think a lot of these folks are going to take those positions and hold them. And, you know,
you're right about that.
How concerned are you?
I'm concerned. I mean, look, I haven't had the focus that y'all have had because I've been able to turn it off. But when you read it, it seems a bit crazy. And you just wonder, John, I can't help but reflect on his previous administration where he brought in people and he said, I've got the best and the brightest. Mad Dog Mattis. Remember talking about him and Rex Tillerson. Well, within, 12 to 18 months, all of those people were the worst human beings on the planet. And they were all dumb, and he shouldn't have picked them, as he would say himself. And you can't just help but see that we're about to go through the same exercise. And what I wonder is, let me throw it back at you. John Thune becomes the Senate leader. Mitch McConnell's gone away. There's a man who knew how to make the system operate. Is this a rational leader, or is this a guy who's going to have to go all in on Trump mania?
You're talking about Thune?
Yep, sir.
Yeah, so I like John Thune, and I've worked with him in the past. He's a very bright guy. He's a very committed conservative. And obviously, he's a good politician, because I think most observers thought Rick Scott had the inside track, because he was the one that Donald Trump supported, Rick Scott from Florida. And I thought he had the inside track. Well, he actually finished third. And then John Cornyn, who... our own Senator Josh Hawley endorsed, was running against Thune, and Thune won that thing. And to put that together, and that Senate caucus is complicated, and to put that together as he did shows a lot of political acumen. So he's got a lot to navigate, and he has been very close to Mitch McConnell throughout McConnell's leadership. And so I expect Thune's going to do a very good job. I don't know if you've read much about this recess appointment situation.
But, no, I haven't.
So the thought is, there's a provision that if Congress is out of session for 10 days or more, the president can make what are called recess appointments. And that means those appointments take their position without confirmation, and they serve as acting secretary of whatever.
Sure.
So there's a
breaking more norms.
There's a push on to get that recess to happen. And that's what I'm going to be keeping my eye on. I don't want to keep you, because you got to go to cooking school. Can't wait. You cook me some pasta when you get back, buddy.
Hey, have a good time there in St. Louis, and look forward to getting back, Michigan. But what a special place this is. Have a good day, brother.
Well, see you soon. Michael Kelly from Florence, Italy. I'll be back after the news right here on KMOX.
Time for the Friday edition of Hancock and Kelly.
You two belong together.
Sponsored by CertaPro Painters. John Hancock, Michael Kelly on News Radio 1120, KMOX.
Top of the morning, everyone. John Hancock signing in. If you're just now tuning in, you don't know that Michael Kelly is in Italy. We just spoke to him last hour, and he is, in fact, in Italy. He's taking a cooking class right now. Now, here's a guy. You know, he's a confirmed bachelor, and... I don't think he does a lot of cooking there at his place, but maybe this is going to be an inspiration for him, and he'll come back and become gourmet chef. Wouldn't that be something? Well, we're living in very interesting times, my friend, and the new incoming Trump administration is taking shape before us. And I thought I'd kind of go through my thoughts on some of these cabinet picks and get your thoughts, too. If you want to chime in, 314-436-7900. Love to hear from you. Otherwise, you're stuck with my thoughts. I thought the initial pick of Susie Wiles, who is now going to be the chief of staff for President-elect Trump, was a solid pick. Susie's been involved in a very long time through multiple Republican administrations, and she served various presidents. She was the chief architect of this particular campaign, which clearly succeeded and kept the trains running on time. She did a pretty good job on balance of keeping the candidate focused throughout the election. And I thought that was a really good, encouraging pick for the incoming Trump administration, as was the next announcement of Marco Rubio as Secretary of State. Here's a guy who's had a very good career in the U.S. Senate dealing with foreign affairs. He's very well versed in American foreign policy. Smart guy, Marco Rubio. And I think on balance, he's going to be a very good selection to head the State Department. And I was encouraged by that. The next pick I found a little puzzling. And there's been some other minor picks. John Radcliffe going to the CIA. He served in the first Trump administration, former member of Congress. He's going to be the head of the Central Intelligence Agency. And I think that's a pretty solid pick as well. We're going to visit with Colonel Jeff McCausland later this hour. I'm curious to get his thoughts because he came up through the defense intelligence infrastructure. He's been part of it for his entire career. He's a retired colonel. But the next pick of Pete Hegseth, the Fox News, Fox and Friends weekend co-host, as the Secretary of Defense was a puzzle to me. Hegseth is a very strong conservative, very outspoken. He is a major in the U.S. Army. Traditionally, the picks for the Secretary of Defense, well, we've had some civilians, people like Donald Rumsfeld come to mind, but more often than not, they've been retired generals. James Mattis certainly fit that bill. The current Secretary of Defense for Joe Biden is a retired general. So Pete Hegseth is a very, I guess the most generous thing I could say, is a very non-traditional choice for that post. And I thought at the time he was nominated that his confirmation was going to be difficult in the Senate. And I'm not so sure about that now, given some of the picks that have succeeded Pete Hegseth. And I sort of expect him to get confirmed by the U.S. Senate. He will become the Secretary of Defense in charge of all of our troops, all branches of the service. They're from the Pentagon. That's going to, you know, you wish him well. And I do wish him well. And I hope he does a very good job in that post. A very non-traditional pick, nonetheless. And then you get Tulsi Gabbard for the Director of National Intelligence. Here's a problem. And I don't know whether she'll be confirmed. She's a Democrat, former member of Congress from Hawaii. She has served in the armed forces, but she said some very controversial things, and she's been very engaged with American enemies. I'm thinking of Bashar al-Assad of Syria, who was out there just committing atrocities against his own people in conjunction with Vladimir Putin. This goes back into the Obama administration era. And the purge that was going on in Syria at that time. She met with al-Assad. She spoke in favor of him, supportive of what he was doing to his people in Syria. That was a concern. And then when Russia invaded Ukraine, she basically took the Russian position that it was America's fault, that he had to invade Ukraine because America was inviting them into NATO, and that would put NATO right on his border. Those were precisely Vladimir Putin's talking points, and she trumpeted them. Her nomination, I think, is going to be very controversial, and whether she can muster enough Republican votes in the Senate to get confirmed, I don't know. I think the Matt Gaetz selection for Attorney General of all of them is probably the worst. He's a guy that he practiced law in a law firm as a junior associate right out of law school for just about 2 years. And then he got elected to Congress. He's not practiced law since. He would be, as Attorney General, the head of a Justice Department of thousands and thousands of employees. The FBI is in the Justice Department. All of the U.S. attorneys that prosecute criminals all across the country are part of the U.S. Justice Department. Matt Gaetz has got a pending ethics probe in the U.S. House of Representatives that alleges that he was paying for underage women to go to sex parties that were drug parties as well. I suspect that report's going to be released. I suspect that his confirmation will, well, I kind of think his nomination will be withdrawn before it ever gets to confirmation, but we'll see. But that pick, wow, is all I can say about that pick. And then yesterday we learned that Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Has been tapped to be the head of the Health and Human Services agency in the federal government. That pick, too, a very controversial one. Kennedy, who is not a fan of vaccines, and, you know, has said that he would like to gut the National Institute of Health that does so much of the research on diseases. And look, the NIH has been controversial. All of this going back to COVID, when the federal response to COVID, whether it was the Centers for Disease Control, certainly the World Health Organization, that the U.S. pulled out of in the Trump administration, went back into it in the Biden administration. I suspect we'll pull out of the World Health Organization again. But all of that, very controversial, and whether Kennedy can get the confirmation votes remains to be seen. I think he's got a better shot, certainly, than Matt Gaetz does. But, you know, these are historic selections by Donald Trump. And I don't think any of them really are a surprise. This is exactly what Donald. The one thing you can say about Donald Trump, he tells you what he's going to do, and he does it. And the fact that anybody should be surprised at what Donald Trump is doing, they're just not paying attention, because he does exactly what he says he's going to do, and that's really all you can ask for a politician. And then it's up to us to assess that and make a decision. And you know what? Collectively, as a country, this is what we've chosen. And this is the path that we're moving on. And this is the path that we're going to move forward with. So, you know, that's about the way it is. But those are my thoughts on the cabinet selections. I wanted to share them with you. When we come back, we're going to talk a little NFL football. And later in the show, Colonel Jeff McCausland, CBS News military analyst, will be with us. It's the Hancock and Kelly Show on KMOX. Welcome back to Hancock and Kelly on the Voice of St. Louis. Joining us right now is our good friend and CBS News military analyst, Colonel Jeff McCausland, retired U.S. Army. Colonel McCausland, suffice to say, there's a lot going on in the national security and foreign affairs space right now, leading into a new administration. What's your take so far?
Well, you got to remember, John, there's an old Chinese saying, may you live in interesting times. That's a Chinese curse. And some might say that's where we are right now. The Trump administration, has made some unbelievable announcements in terms of main nominees for cabinet positions across the government. It's made a couple that were seen to be somewhat traditional. I mean, Mario Rubio, a senator with vast national security and foreign policy experience from his time in the Senate, being selected to be the Secretary of State, it seems to be a pretty obvious choice and one that'll be easily confirmed. But obviously, the one I watch is, of course, this the pending nomination of Pete Hegseth, a Fox News and Fox and Friends host, to be Secretary of Defense. Is pretty extraordinary. But in the last 24 hours or so, that's even been outdone by making Robert Kennedy Jr. the nomination for Health and Human Services. Somebody said to me this morning, that's sort of like naming a flat earther to be the head of NASA, and then Tulsi Gabbard to be the head of DNI. And then last but not least, and perhaps most extraordinary of all, Matt Gaetz, who's still where he was under investigation by the Ethics Committee of the House for having sex with underage women, that he paid for that and using drugs. And now he's going to be the chief law enforcement officer of the United States.
It's I would dare say that it's unprecedented. Let's go to Secretary of Defense designee,
sure,
Pete Hegseth. So how non-traditional a pick is this?
Well, it's pretty non-traditional. Like I said, he, you know, his main background is as a co-host on Fox and Friends, one of Mr. Trump's primary programs that he would watch. He does have military experience. One should certainly acknowledge that. He was a junior officer in both Iraq and Afghanistan. He turned a couple of Bronze Stars, and we should honor his service. But I can tell you from where I sit, that level of military experience has frankly nothing whatsoever to do with being the Secretary of Defense, where you're now going to oversee roughly a $900 billion a year annual budget, 1.3 million people in uniform, probably another 750,000 civilians at multiple hundreds of locations all around the world. And you're going to have to deal right at the moment with two major wars in the region of the Middle East and, of course, the war in Ukraine, growing threats from China, growing threats from North Korea and Iran, real questions about the defense budget, which for the current year still hasn't been passed by the United States Congress, and questions about rapidly increasing costs for a nuclear modernization program that's ongoing, and then arcane things about should we pursue an arms control negotiation with the Russians despite our current unpleasantries with them, because if we don't and the current agreement expires as it's supposed to in 2026, then we'll be on the path to a nuclear arms race, which will be unbelievably destabilizing and unbelievably expensive for everybody. So in either case, do I see Hegseth having the vast national security experience that we have seen in previous secretaries of defense, or the vast significant corporate leadership experience in running a large-scale organization? Because ultimately, the Pentagon is perhaps the biggest corporation on the planet.
Yeah, and, you know, the subsequent appointments of Gabbard and Getz and RFK, I think, make confirmation for a guy like Pete Hegseth more likely than perhaps...
Absolutely.
Than it would have been when he was initially named. Let's go to the DNI appointment of Tulsi Gabbard. A lot of concern being expressed out there because of comments she has made in the past as it relates to Syria and certainly Russia. What do we know about her?
Well, let's start with, again, just sort of your background. I mean, she served about 8 years in the United States Congress as a representative from the great state of Hawaii, but did not serve on the Foreign Relations Committee, the best of my knowledge, Intel Committee. She has no real background in that particular world. Yes, she also spent time in the U.S. military, was in Iraq. I think she may still or recently may have given up a lieutenant colonelcy in the Army Reserve, but again, nothing to do with intelligence services. And again, has no background in running now seven major separate intelligence services and the vast, you know, corporate management requirements for that. But along the way, she was a Democrat, then she became Republican. And along the way, in the war in Iraq, war in Afghanistan, she initially trumpeted many of the Moscow's talking points that the United States and Ukraine were building chemical and biological factories in Ukraine to strike Russia, all of which was totally untrue. She actually trumpeted those particular comments. And I even saw a clip way back when from Russian television where she actually appeared. And when her interview concluded, one of the Russian commentators said, my goodness, she just made all of Putin's talking points. She subsequently made a trip to Syria on her own to meet with Bashar al-Assad, the butcher of Syria. So there's a real question right now whether or not Tulsi Gabbard, I think, could pass an FBI check to get a security clearance at a confidential level, which might make leading the intelligence services a little difficult.
One concern I've heard expressed, and I'm curious to get your opinion, because this is your area, you know, defense and intelligence. Is it possible that our allies will cease sharing their intel with the United States out of concern of Tulsi Gabbard leading as DNI?
Well, I would say that's absolutely very possible, to say the least, to compromise what we call sources and means. You know, that's one of the big concerns, not just the intelligence that you worry about somebody sharing. It's what that does in terms of compromising agents, what that does in compromising methods. And they would be very, very concerned about that, to say the very least.
Well, we're going to keep an eye on that. Before we let you go, I wanted to get your thoughts It looks very much like American policy towards support for Ukraine is going to come to an end. What does that mean for that conflict?
Well, you're right. Apparently, there was a big gala at Mar-a-Lago last night, and Mr. Trump made some remarks. And in one of the remarks he apparently made, so reported this morning, was this war in Ukraine has got to come to a close. Obviously, the way to do that and do that quickly, and he said he could do it in 24 hours, though he's never said how, would be to cease U.S. military aid to Ukraine, basically starve their force of the support we give them in ammunition and weapons, and force them to the conference table and force them, frankly, then to accept the terms Mr. Putin has insisted upon. And Putin's been very consistent, oh, by the way, and reiterated them just the other day that, okay, yeah, we can negotiate once, and this is, we can negotiate when you accept that these four provinces are actually Russian, number one. Number two, when we neutralize the government in Kyiv, which probably means Zelensky has to go. And number three, when you forego and denounce any possibility of ever joining NATO. Those are his conditions, and you will basically force them to do that. And when you do that, what we've very done a lot, frankly, in terms of international norms, is we said aggression is okay by big states. Big states, big powers do what they want. Small powers do what they can. And that's the law of the jungle, and that's the world we're going back to. So that will be obviously very difficult for Ukraine. Second of all, what I really worry about is the knock-on effect that has on NATO. And, of course, Mr. Trump and those around him have been very, very critical of NATO as an alliance. Mr. Biden's policy obviously was to strengthen NATO, expanded NATO, Finland, Sweden joined the last couple of years. What this does to NATO, because ultimately the Russians, Soviets that I've dealt with for the last 50 years, every Soviet-Russian leader since Lenin, well, not really since Lenin, since the NATO was formed, has had as the goal to weaken and ultimately destroy NATO. And so the Russians see Ukraine as obviously part and parcel of that goal as well.
Is there, does Western Europe have enough resources to support the Ukrainian armed military enough to continue to keep this battle going, or is that just not possible?
I don't think they do at the moment, because one thing that occurred in Europe and NATO countries in Europe in the aftermath of the Cold War is they allowed their defense industries really to shrivel in terms of the production of tanks, artillery, ammunition, et cetera. And they became, frankly, more reliant on the United States. I mean, one of the crazy things about the war in Ukraine is we just voted, I think it was $60 billion in military aid. What most Americans don't understand is about 70% of that $60 billion will never leave the United States. It's money that's going to be sent to U.S. defense manufacturers, Lockheed Martin, General Dynamics, Raytheon, et cetera, to purchase weapons. So it's actually great for U.S. industries in many, many ways. Europeans have also become very dependent on our particular industries, and for them to, you know, create and expand dramatically their defense industries in a relatively short period of time is obviously impossible in terms of providing the mass amount of hardware, equipment, ammo that the Ukrainians need, while also trying at the same time to build up their own stockpiles.
Well, we always enjoy the insight. Colonel Jeff McCausland has been our guest. Thanks so much, sir. We'll talk down the road, keep our eyes on what's unfolding before them right here on KMOX.
Thanks, John.
All right, when we come back, it's going to be Roger Earl. He's been the founding drummer of the rock band Foghat. They're a good one. Yeah, they're coming back to town on November 23rd at the Family Arena. He joins us after this on KMOX. And does that take me back to my youth? This was back when both of my legs still worked and I had hair.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm a fool for the city.
Indeed, indeed you are. That is the founding drummer of the great band Foghat, Roger Earl, who joins us right now. You guys are coming to town on November 23rd at the St. Charles Family Arena. Roger, yeah. welcome to KMOX, and let's start at the beginning.
How, oh, no.
Yeah, you were there. You were there at the beginning.
I was there, yeah.
Who assembled whom?
Assembled whom? Well, myself and loads of Dave left a band called Savoy Brown, and then we formed Foghat. We got Rob Price, who I think was probably one of the surely greatest blues rock slide players ever. But they both passed, and I miss them. Actually, we wrote a couple of songs about, wrote one about Dave that we've recorded called Tonsils and Sneakers. That's how he used to introduce himself on stage. And we wrote another song about Rob Price, and it was called Black Days and Blue Nights, because he struggled with his fame and abilities.
Hmm. And you guys...
But we remember our fellow musicians. I mean, it's important. I'm just lucky to be here. The good Lord hasn't seemed to take me just yet, and I'm pleased about that.
Well, man, ripping those skins is a lot of work. You've got to be in tip-top shape.
I try, you know, I stretch, I work out with lightweights, I walk, I don't run anymore, I ride my bike when the weather's nice, and I pick up my sticks every day, I sit on the pad and, like, keep my hands, and I travel with a pedal and a practice pad just to annoy the neighbors in the hotel. You know what it is? It's John I'm talking to, right?
Yes.
I'm one of those fortunate people in this world who gets to... playing a really good, a great rock and roll band and earn a living at it. I don't have to go to work. And you know what work is for us? Sitting in planes, sitting in cars, hurry up and wait, hanging around backstage for the hour and a half that we get to play on stage. That's fun. It's fun.
Yeah, I mean, making music is a tremendous, tremendous thing. And it's such a... It's life-giving, you know. It's a wonderful... Now, you guys, really interesting, because you guys are, you know, from across the pond, as they say. But your roots in this music is like blues and even boogie-woogie. And you guys, you grew up in an era where, you know, boogie was everywhere when you were a little boy, you know. How did that music so influence your style?
Well, you have to go back into history. All contemporary music from one way or another comes from the States. This is where it started, with the blues, when they dragged the Africans out of Africa, jazz, bebop, rock and roll, country music, soul music, gospel music, folk music. This is the land of music. This is where it comes from. And you've got this beautiful melting pot of stuff. You know, it comes from Europe. I mean, like folk music from music from Italy, music from Spain, France, Ireland, Scotland, and it is like it's this big melting pot. And even to this day, the States give music to the world, you know, with contemporary music. Music shouldn't stay the same anyway. It should always change. You know, every generation has their music. And but this is the land of music. This is why I always wanted to come here ever since when I was about 8 years old. I told my older brother that I was going to stow away. And he went along with it for a while until I packed my bags one afternoon. And he said, "Where are you going?" And I said, "I'm going to stow away." And he smacked me around the ear and said, "Don't be so stupid." But I got here eventually. The first time I came to the States was 69. It felt like coming home.
Yeah, and how long have you lived? You live in Long Island now. How long have you been there?
Since I moved here in 73.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I got my green card in 76. I've moved around a bit. I've lived in L.A. I've lived in Florida. Actually, we have a band house down in Florida. We have a studio down there where we record all our records. Actually, we just had an album released about a year ago. And called Sonic Mojo, and it spent 32 weeks in the Billboard top 10 of the Billboard blues charts. So yeah, we're still making music.
And this blew me away. For the first time in history, this new album Sonic Mojo is nominated for a Grammy, and that's the first time you've had that distinction. That's got to be pretty special.
Not nominated. We just sort of put it up for one. So we'll see. Yeah, it was special, actually. Yeah, but we were in some pretty heady company, as it were. But it's all about the music, anyway. By the way, talking about music, Head East is a band that we've played with many times.
Oh, sure. Years.
They're going to be on the show, too, right?
They are. That's what a great band that is.
Yeah, they are. They are a great band.
Let me ask you this. When you guys started touring, because I saw you early on, well, you'd been around. I saw you maybe 1979, 1980 here in St. Louis.
Oh, we were hot.
Yeah, you were. But when you started touring, you were opening for somebody, right? Who were you opening for on your first couple of tours?
Jay Giles, I remember, fantastic band. Humble Pie, they were the two bands that loved touring with. They were great bands to play with, really, really great people. Became really good friends with CB Marriott. Jay Giles is probably, I think, probably one of the best American bands ever.
Yeah.
So they were one of my favorites. Their show was incredible. They played great. They were my two favorites back in the day. But we played with just about everybody. It's always fun with ZZ Top and a few other bands from the Midwest.
Yeah. Did you ever play with Kansas?
Yes, great band. Yeah. We're good friends with their lead guitar player, especially Brian, our lead guitar player, is good friends with them. Great band. Made some great, great music. Actually, they have a great drummer, too, don't they?
Yeah, they do. They do. And so does Foghat have a great drummer, and he's Roger Earl. He's been our guest. They're going to be at the Family Arena on November 23rd. All the hits, right?
All the hits, yeah. So Ride, Fall for the City, I Just Want to Make Love to You, Stone Blue. Actually, we do one ballad, which was Third Time Lucky, which actually was probably one of our highest charting singles.
Oh, that's a nice piece, man. Yeah, that's a nice piece.
Actually, when it was released, I think a lot of people didn't realize it was Foghat.
Yeah.
Hey,
yeah.
We can be a little mellow for about 5 minutes. That's about it, though.
But you'll be rocking that night away at the Family Arena. Roger Earl, thanks so much for your time. And we are out of time. It's the Chris and Amy Show next, right here on KMOX.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together, we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.